From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're revisiting a topic from our e-podcast days, large expression engine sites. And returning to the show to talk with us is Travis Smith. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Visual Chefs, a versatile web development agency with expertise in content management system and custom web application development. Through partnerships with designers, agencies, and organizations, Visual Chefs propels the web forward. Visit visualchefs.com to learn more.
As Leah mentioned, today we're talking about a topic we've already tackled back when we were the EE podcast, large EE sites. But it's been 3 years since then, and actually it's almost 3 years to the day.
Yeah, totally.
And a lot has changed with Expression Engine, the EE community, and the sites running Expression Engine, which is why we have Travis Smith as our guest again, because he's updated his statistics about the largest sites running on EE, the very same statistics that prompted our original EE podcast episode. In addition to being a steward of these EE stats, Travis is the owner of Hop Studios, an award-winning web design and development company. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So, Travis, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. I run a company called Hop Studios. We're based in Vancouver, Canada. We've been in business now for 12 years, I guess, something like that. And we focus on Expression Engine development and design. We're probably Canada's, my website says we're Canada's leading expression engine development company, so I hope that's true. and I've been doing website, someone asked me about this recently, I've been doing website development for 21 years now. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see where this thing has come from a long, long time ago.
Let's talk about what you've been up to since we first talked with you 3 years ago. As you mentioned, your Hop Studios agency does a lot of EE work. Is that still your primary CMS that you use for your clients?
Yeah, if anything, we're probably more EE heavy than 3 years ago.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we've added many more clients that are Expression Engine, and we've lost one or two along the way that were not Expression Engine. So I wouldn't say that we've been deliberately moving towards more EE. That's just the percentages have just shifted because we've grown and we've stuck with the product.
Do you use any other CMSs or even build something custom?
Oh, building something custom, no. We've got sites on a number of other platforms out there still. We have a couple sites in Drupal, and we have one in Movable Type still, actually. We've got...
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I know. Actually, that one is a single site that's running Movable Type and Expression Engine. Don't ask.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's actually called Real Baking with Rose, and it has the forums were Expression Engine. So that was an interesting mix, because we built it a long time ago, and we've never switched it over. We've also got some sites that are built with... just simple templating cloud-based solutions like Squarespace and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, right. No, we've stuck with EE.
I like hearing that. You know, we've heard a lot the past couple of years, and we even find it true for ourselves that, you know, we are using more CMS options that aren't Expression Engine because I feel that the offerings are simply better than they were 3 years ago. We still have a lot of EE clients, but we've definitely dabbled more in other areas. So it's kind of nice to hear that your core business is still solidly EE and growing strong.
Yeah, it is. And I think that comes from probably the place where we are. People seek us out because they want Expression Engine. So we would feel weird convincing them to use some other CMS. Though there have been one or two cases where someone's come along and we've said, oh, you know, the best tool for you is actually a slightly different CMS. So we're not wedded to it. It just, that's how our business has grown.
Interesting. So as your business has grown, your experience obviously has affected your choices and everything, and includes your perception of what a large site is possibly. When we originally chatted, your primary factor defining what a large site was traffic. Is that still true? Has that changed?
I would say that is definitely still true. You know, for me, a large site is a site that handles a large number of visitors looking at a large number of pages. And there's some things that feed into that. Like certainly a site that has a single page is unlikely to have the same amount of total traffic as a site that has 20,000 different pages.
Right.
But at the same time, if you're a single page site and you're getting just a huge amount of traffic, for me, that puts you on the list.
What are some of the other factors that might make a site large, particularly where EE is involved? Could it be like the number of templates that are used to create the pages on the site, or the number of like members and perhaps like a membership forum?
Yeah. I mean, for my definition of largest, I was going by what would appear to, if you just were talking to somebody walking down the street, that mm-hmm. they'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, I understand why that site is large. There's definitely sites that I've seen that are insanely complicated, but don't necessarily have a huge amount of traffic. We did an upgrade for someone recently, and they were using Multisite Manager, and they had like 9 sites in there, each of which had like, some of them had a couple sub-sites, and each of them had like, you know, 48 templates, and it wasn't that they had a simple sort of set of templates and then 9 different sites they wanted to sort of power. They were just a big, confusing ball of mess. But they weren't getting a huge amount of traffic, and they wouldn't have ended up on our list, even though I think for EE developers, they might have been quite interested in, like, what's going on with that site? How do they run that all?
I think Leigh and I are actually dealing with that right now. We inherited a site, which is also a multi-site manager system, and it's got a mind-boggling number of templates, like, I haven't seen anything quite like that before. And we're trying to move the client away from that sort of situation. But it does lead to my perception as the developer, at least, of a very large site, particularly in terms of maintaining it or changing it or, you know, even upgrading it.
Well, I think that's true. And I also think that sometimes a site that is large and complicated under the skin doesn't necessarily have to be. We have a site recently that grew. It's a newspaper site, and it grew from, you know, just having a couple of different sections to having many, many different sections and columnists. And the way that they'd built it, you know, they ended up creating new groups of templates every time they added a section. Well, ultimately, they had hundreds and hundreds of template groups even. And then we decided, okay, well, we should go back and refactor that, and now they have a much smaller number of template groups, but their site traffic is actually bigger. So, you know, the outer view and the inner view are not always the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like you described every WordPress developer trying to get into Expression Engine site, because I've inherited similar sites like that where, whoa, they literally made a template group or a template for every single channel, or there's a channel for every page.
Yes.
And while that creates a site, that's not an Expression Engine site, you know? So that's really interesting.
I had a site that I worked on. It was a 5 or 6 page site, and each page had 3 channels.
What?
Yeah, they used channels for each part of the page, like a channel. And so anyways, it was odd.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's one of the, I think, it's a challenge, I think is the best way to put it, is that EE can really do just about anything. You can make it do whatever you want, whether it's good or bad or efficient or not. And I think back to some of my earlier EE builds, and they were not necessarily efficient in terms mm-hmm. of use of channels and templates and stuff. And I think it just reflects how far, at least I have come since I started using Expression Engine, however many years ago it's been, that I can now see that there is, you know, while you say it's true, like the front and the inside don't necessarily equal large, but when you're dealing with a lot of assets inside Expression Engine, it does lend your thinking to, you know, this could be much better. Whereas, you know, 6 years ago, I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is fine. No problem. It's just a big site with a lot of templates that I have to manage.
Yeah. And even still, for some of our more complicated clients, we sit down and at the beginning and go, okay, how are we going to do this? Are we going to use categories or channels or mm-hmm. statuses or some sort of text field, or, you know, just how are we going to make this content easy to build and then to update and so forth? But in terms of largest, it's really, for the purpose of the list, it's about traffic and also about, you know, the amount of content the site has. And then mm-hmm. I don't want to say just name recognition, though that helps, but I mean certainly like the amount of sort of buzz, or that somebody would look at that list and go, oh, wow, that one, you know, that's
Right.
That's what I want to have for the list.
So let's talk about that list a little bit. Why did you initially compile those statistics back in 2012?
I initially compiled the list because I couldn't find one. I think that's how a lot of resources on the internet get started. And I wanted to have a list of what was really big out there. I think at the time I had also heard that the was it this long ago that that Barack Obama's site was built in Expression Engine, and I was like, really?
Right.
No way it can handle that much traffic. And I checked it out, and sure enough, it did. So I just decided that I was gonna create a list and share it because it was useful for my clients in selling, or my potential clients to say, hey, yeah, Expression Engine can handle that. And then at the same time, I was just curious myself, like I wanted to see what other developers were up to and, you know, who was handling the big sites and then how they were doing it, you know, so I could call them up and say, how are you doing that?
So is that something that you utilize often when you're dealing with, let's say, a prospect to talk about, you know, Expression Engine supporting these large systems? It's primarily a sales resource for you?
Yes, absolutely. Though I will say that there have been fewer times when people have seemed concerned about the traffic that Expression Engine can handle over the past 3 years than I would say over the 3 years before that.
Huh,
interesting.
I don't know if that's because Expression Engine is a more sort of solid, mature product now and people just know that it can handle traffic, or if it's not being considered for the super big traffic sites that are being built out there. I don't know which it is. I'd like to think it's the former.
Interesting. Well, that leads me to wonder, you know, since originally compiling your original 2012 list, and then very recently, just last week, you updated the list, what's changed since then? Does your updated statistics reveal anything in regards to the landscape of large EE sites?
This year, and I do try to update it annually, though I think I missed a year in there. So I think this is the second update since we talked last. This year, there weren't as many changes on the list. There weren't as many new large sites. But I don't want to say that that's because its Expression Engine isn't being used for large sites. For some reason, I had a harder time just finding big sites or getting feedback about what sites that are really large that are on Expression Engine are. You know, there were a couple new additions this year, but I feel like maybe I could have done a better job in finding some other really, really big ones.
Or does that really reflect that things are just kind of staying steady?
I do think it reflects that things are staying steady. There's been a couple of sites from the list, and I keep a list of not just the ones I publish, but I have a very long list of like sites that are, you know, number 30, 40, 50, 60 or whatever, you know, that are just lower. And there have been a few that have switched away from Expression Engine to some other content management system or that have gone away in general. I mean, that happens with websites. Sure. But yeah, I think it might also just be an indication of stability that like once Garmin is using it to run some of their infrastructure, they're going to be huge. And, you know, there's not going to be another site that comes along to take them off of that list. Because, you know, hey, I know my extremely large clients, and they're not even really on the list other than one. My really large clients, they don't want to switch content management systems. They like Expression Engine, and they're not about to go through the process of migration if they don't need to.
Right. They're invested.
Yeah.
All right. So, Travis, you actually updated your statistics just the other day. The two things that stand out to me as new, because you highlighted them so nicely in green, is we actually have the Donald Trump sites running on it, and so is a religious ministry site. I think it's interesting that Barack Obama site's still at number one, and then now we have another U.S. presidential candidate using the sites. Do you have any knowledge of who the developers are with those? Did that person, you know, kind of, I don't know, were they inspired by the success of Barack Obama's site and how it handled the traffic so well during his initial campaign, and that why it was a good fit? Or?
Yeah, so I don't know if that's the case. Actually, I'll tell you a little bit of backstory. I think I said earlier that it was Barack's site that made me think, oh, you know, Expression Engine can handle really, really big traffic. But I was looking at it just now. It was actually change.gov, which was the site that Barack put into place right after he got elected about, like, you know, what are we going to do when we get in? And that was the one that made me go, wow, everybody's heard of that. That's amazing. So yes, it is very interesting. And then after that, his personal site, not the White House site, but the personal site was Expression Engine. So yeah, I find it pretty interesting that on this list, you've got Barack Obama and Donald Trump, On the other side, you've got number 7 and 8. One is a very pornographic website, and the other is a religious ministry that's pro-life, and they're just about the same amount of traffic. So yeah, this list has a bunch of contradictions like that. The developer of the Trump site is, and I'm blanking on, I should not forget his name, he runs everything. It's the Dev Demon guy. It's
Brad Parscale.
Oh. Yeah, it's Parscale. It's those guys.
Parscale. Yeah.
And he confirmed with me after I put the list up that that yes, in fact, the Trump site is still running Expression Engine. I knew that it was running it last year, but I hadn't confirmed it as of the publication date of the list. And traffic wise, I haven't updated the list. So I'll look for that number before the end of the interview. But yeah, it's getting pretty significant amounts of traffic, as you might guess.
Mm-hmm. It just occurs to me, I just wonder if that seemed, I mean, obviously Brad is going to choose Expression. It's going to be one of his top choices because he's so experienced in it. But I wonder if it was part of his sales discussion to say, well, this is supported a site for a presidential candidate, it can support this kind of traffic. I can see that being a really useful sales discussion.
I think it totally would be. You know, the fact that Expression Engine can be a good administrative backend and a very secure content management system, mm-hmm. that it has handled, you know, the traffic of a presidential candidate before, I think that was probably all part of the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they... I have no knowledge of this. I don't know if they ended up working with Brad because they asked a bunch of people to pitch and then he said Expression Engine is the way to go, or if the people decided they wanted an Expression Engine site and then went to Brad because he's probably really, really good at this stuff. So it could be either way.
So I think I know the answer to this question based on what you've already said, that EE is a good fit for large sites. But do you have any feelings about what EE offers that makes it unique or better than other solutions for, you know, these large traffic sites?
It's a good question. I think that there's a couple things that make Expression Engine good at large traffic sites. One is that, and this is sort of indirect, I mentioned the administrative control panel. You've got so much flexibility and control in Expression Engine to be able to create a system of organizing your content, no matter how complex that content is, right? Like whether you're talking,
right.
You know, like you got all these relationships and you have fields that have all sorts of different kinds of data and you want to keep it all sort of in easier to use sort of interface. I won't say easy to use because none of it's easy if it's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. But Expression Engine, I just feel like it's a good tool for people. So I feel like that's, if you can show that it's going to handle the traffic, then you can say, well, it's going to handle the traffic, but really it's going to make your life easier. And you're going to have a bunch of editors and you're going to have a bunch of people trying to change this and trying to change that all at once. And you want your content to go these 6 different places, and Expression Engine is going to just be able to manage all that for you. And then the second one again is that it's not directly traffic related. It's that, and we always pitch on security and say, look, Expression Engine is not going to get hacked, or at least not easily. And I feel like for a large traffic site, especially if you're pro-life or if you're Donald Trump or if you're Barack Obama, security is probably really far up there on your list, and you don't want to go with a system that's constantly, constantly getting malware attacks or that you need to keep updated instantly. You know, it's not just that Expression Engine's secure, it's that if I set up an Expression Engine site for somebody, I don't need to update it every month or month and a half to the latest version, you know? I can set it up, and it's probably going to be pretty safe for at least a couple of years. I don't know when the last time EE had a security bulletin was, but it's been a while. Knock on wood.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though that isn't, quote, directly related to traffic, it sort of is, because the larger a site is in terms of traffic, the bigger target they are for hackers, regardless of what the content is just that they want to go after high traffic sites to have some sort of splashy, you know, anarchy or impact or something like that. And also some people, they do just find pleasure in trying to poke holes in a popular site or system. And then you add the subject matter on top of that, and that intensifies the need of having a system that is hyper secure and rather solid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the main features of EE that's clearly a benefit for large sites. But, you know, a lot has changed in the EE software landscape in 3 years. EE3 has now just been released. In regards to that, is there any particular features or benefits since the first time we spoke to you to now that has helped large scale needs and helped high traffic sites?
Well, I don't know that many large sites that have switched over to EE3 yet, and certainly none of my large clients have done that. Partially, that's because not all the add-ons have converted over yet, though I will say that they're being converted over, they're being updated for EE3 at a really good pace compared to the EE1 to 2 conversion, I think. They're like, I've just been really impressed with like how soon it's going to be where pretty much every add-on that I can think of is going to get upgraded, which is great.
But even EE2.10, right? Like, I mean, that brought a lot of new features to EE. Do you think any of that benefited large-scale sites?
Yes and no. For the EE2 line, I think that there has been a lot of functionality that's been rolled into the core of EE that used to be handled by add-ons, and that's always a positive in terms of people who are doing feature comparisons. But I would also say that if you were a large site and you were running EE 2.5 and you needed to use some add-ons to make your site do what you wanted it to do, you would probably have done that. So I don't know that it was a showstopper. I just think it's nice. The big thing with EE3, I think, is the mobile interface and better file handling. And those two things just were kind of lagging. And to bring those up to speed just really means that, you know, if I was going to tell a new client who was thinking of building a large site, I'd be like, yeah, go with EE3. It's, you know, it's very modern. It's going to be able to handle your needs and your traffic needs. So
I don't remember what version it came out, but when EE introduced nesting and layouts, did that have any impact on how you were developing for your large scale clients? Because it occurs to me, if you were to embrace using the native layouts in favor over embeds, that your page performance could be better, which then, taking it a step further, could make the site more efficient when it is hit with a lot of traffic.
Yeah, you know, again, it is actually a huge benefit. We've been using layouts now, not as long as everybody, because it took me a while to figure out how they worked, but it is sort of a thing you have to wrap your head around, or it wraps its head around you because it's a layout. So, you know, once I figured that out, it definitely allowed us to build in a more efficient way. First of all, straight up just from like database queries and processing time, but also from a maintenance and upkeep and organizing the information and pulling it all out. Like, it just, and building, it just all goes more smoothly now. But again, before layouts came around, there was Stash, which is layouts plus a couple of other extra little thingies, right? Like, Stash was amazing. And I feel like some people who are doing large sites were already sort of taking advantage of that. Again, now that it's native, though, it really, again, puts Expression Engine on yet a higher step, on yet a higher platform of like, yes, we can handle your large traffic site because we can help you be organized about it, and we can help you be efficient about it, and we can use the least amount of database calls necessary to have an incredibly dynamic site, you know? If you have a front page and it's got like 10 different kinds of elements that are in all these different categories and that are coming from all these different sources and all this stuff, like, there's a minimum amount of like calls to the database you have to make to build that page.
Right.
But if you can cut that in a half or a third by being efficient about the structure of the code of the tool, it's a huge help. But I've never pitched to a client on the basis of now Expression Engine has layouts. That's just more of a developer thing, you know? But yeah, it was a huge hit. That, grid, the improved relationships field, all those things.
So when you are pitching to a client that's going to have a large scale site, what are you pitching to the client? You mentioned security, and obviously you can reference some of these prominent sites that are listed in your statistics as proof of its ability to support it. But what are you talking to them about?
You know, I usually show them First of all, like, here's a site that is 5 times bigger than yours that's using Expression Engine and just running just fine with it. You know, like I showed them that, you know, no matter how much you grow, you know, realistically, not exponentially, but even that, you know, Expression Engine can handle it. I know that people used change.gov as the, like, you know, hey, have you heard of change.gov? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's Expression Engine. That's a big thing. And then for a second one, you just always try to find a competitor or a site that they go to often that's mm-hmm. also Expression Engine, you know, like, which is pretty easy because there are a ton of Expression Engine sites out there, and they tend, I shouldn't say they tend, they, I feel like there's sort of clusters of Expression Engine in certain verticals because, you know, right. it just kind of happens. Oh, you know, hey, I was talking to a colleague, I was at a conference, their site's pretty awesome, and it's using Expression Engine, and so we were thinking mm-hmm. of using it too. But one thing I find interesting about that is it's often not, I feel like sites are not necessarily awesome because of Expression Engine. They're awesome because they have really awesome designers or developers who did a really good job. But those people happen to be using Expression Engine to do that really good job, you know, because it's a good tool. So
yeah, I think it's, you know, at least from my perspective, it's a bit challenging when, because your point is exactly correct. I can't help but think about this site that we inherited and that, like I was saying, has tons and tons of templates, this MSM site. And it's an attractive site from a front-end perspective. It's extremely well done. But the EE side just, you know, it's also, what, 5 or 6 years old, so it doesn't reflect some of the current practices. But it just shows that anyone can use a tool, whether they do it right or wrong, and I'm using those terms loosely, you know, is a whole nother story. So I find it really difficult to talk to a client who maybe, not a client, a prospect, who maybe isn't coming to us saying, oh, I've heard about EE, or I even understand what a CMS is. So how you talk to them about what a CMS can do for them. And I think, like with Expression Engine, it occurs to me that one thing that is useful for a site, let's say it has large-scale administrative needs with a large team of content authors and editors. And so in that situation, I would sort of talk about like how we can, you know, create a nice workflow using the system. And it's less talking about EE and more talking about what they would have in their own hands. Do you find yourself having those same sort of conversations that aren't really talking about the platform, but talking about the end result that you could give them?
Yeah, I try to focus on just pitching them on customizability and ease of use so that, again, getting in a car for the first time is complicated, but there are cars that are comfortable and easy to drive, and there are cars that will never be easy to drive, you know? And so, I just show them that, you know, we can customize Expression Engine to be exactly what they need it to be and try to convince them that it's gonna be something that they're going to be able to stick with for the long haul. And actually, I will say this, you know, the upgrade to EE3 modernized the code base to a certain extent, which is also going to help with speed and traffic time, being able to take advantage of some of the latest PHP stuff. But also just, you know, just the fact that Alice Lab continues to show signs of life and put development and effort and improvement into this product, that's great. You know, the track record of EE at this point is like 10 years, 11 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's something pretty wonderful to be able to point to.
Yeah, it's established and you can trust it.
Yeah.
You know, and if not only has the product been around for 10 years, but if you've been working with the product for 10 years, then you're even that much more adept with it.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of which, we've been talking a lot about the benefits of EE and how it works really well, you know, with large sites. What does EE not offer that you wish it did?
Ooh, okay. There's a bunch. One thing is multilingual capability. There's
right
out of the box, Expression Engine is not multilingual, and it's something that add-ons can get you a certain way, a certain distance with. But to be truly multilingual, I think would be a big, big change, but also fantastically useful in a global market. You know, I think the second thing is, again, this is a big one, and it's a combination of workflow and permissions. Right now, Expression Engine, out of the box, you can only be one kind of member. You can either be an editor or a super admin or a member, but you can't be a blog editor and a forum editor, but not a article editor. You know, like right. you can't do permissions like that without getting really complicated. Like they could make the permission model more robust. And then there's a third one. No, I think that's it. When clients come to us and they need a very robust sort of workflow model or like many, many different kinds of members, I sometimes go, oh, I don't even know if Expression Engine is the right choice for you. Like that's just one limitation of the CMS. And I don't know if it needs to be. Like it's working well now for many, many other kinds of sites, but I do think that they could add those things in and take another big chunk of sites.
So that kind of leads into our next question. Do you feel that there are certain types of sites, particularly large scale sites, that EE wouldn't be a good fit for? Like you were just saying, perhaps a large number of members?
If you want to link it back to traffic, I would say no. Like there's no size of site that I would be like, that's too big. Don't use Expression Engine for that. Even, you know, certainly in terms of traffic. In terms of documents or entries, I think you could talk to Anna who does was it number 3 on the site?
Zocaloco or something like that.
Zocalo, newspaper in Mexico. She's got like, I don't remember, but like 500,000 entries or something ridiculous like that. I just made that up, but it's a huge number. Actually, I have the list here.
1,200,000?
Yeah, and I don't think I updated it this year. I think that's from last year. You know, like when you get into millions of documents or millions of files, Expression Engine is just not going to be able to handle that well. And it's nothing on the programmers that just require, at a certain point, you have to switch from doing things one way to doing them another. So that's just a reality of EE. So if you're talking millions of X in terms of entries in the system, then I would say that's not the way to go. But that's not true for everything. Like you can run EE forums with so many entries and it's totally fine. So, and even with members too, you know, you really, really have to get up there in the members before you start running into troubles. And even then, it can all be handled with a good server architecture. So,
yeah, and I think it can also, you know, when we had Anna on last year to talk about using New Relic, I believe it was the Periodico Zocalo site that she had originally used it for to help her identify where some of the bottlenecks were. And, you know, I think when you're getting into millions of entries, that's when it's not just the platform. It then becomes you have to track down every little thing that could be contributing to a slowdown or a bottleneck somewhere on the site. And, you know, even as she was talking to us, it wasn't like, oh, this is all Expression Engine. You know, all the things I found in New Relic it was all EE. You know, it was a mix of various different things. So you have to have kind of everything working at optimal situation when you're dealing with something that massive. And that's hard to come by.
Yeah. And I will say this again, out of the box Expression Engine, the defaults that they have for so many things throughout the system, they almost always err on the side of scalability and sustainability. Like, you know, if you build an Expression Engine site with EE and you leave things kind of at their defaults as you go and you build it the way EE wants you to build, it's really, really scalable. When I see people get into trouble, it's because they have, you know, built a site and they haven't understood what the consequences of it changing a certain setting might be. Even something like, when you're creating new fields, there's a little box that says, do you want to make this field searchable, yes or no? And most people, they go, yeah, I want to make this field searchable. That seems like something I'd want to do. But if you're not thinking carefully about why you want to make that field searchable, or you don't understand that that's only means searchable on the front end, that fields are always searchable on the back end, or just little things like that, then you know, you'll end up with preferences that put more load on the database than needs to be.
Absolutely.
Good point.
We got a tip from Anna, that same podcast episode on New Relic that we are implementing for other clients. It's a super small setting, but if you use Structure, there's an option to, what is it, to add a trailing slash or to take it off? I can't remember.
No, it's to actually add. And it's on by default, because I think in the old school, like way, way back in
EE1.
Yeah. Like they always added the slash. And then in newer versions of EE, Expression Engine would remove that slash. And then I remember there was like some SEO back and forth, whether you should have a slash or no slash at the end of a URL. And at the end of the day, the no slash at the end of the URL won. However, when structure was being built, I think that check to have the slash on there is on by default. So what ends up happening is that EE removes the slash, and then structure tries to add it back. And then if you have some HT access going on trying to add or remove a slash, that adds another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. So basically for this particular client site we were troubleshooting, we found out that just turning that off so that there's no forced slash at the end of the URL dropped resource usage by 40%.
Yeah.
Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah,
like, it totally. Was ridiculous. We were like, I can't believe that adding the slash was a 40% increase in resources.
Yeah. I've had things like that,
it
too.
It is little things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
It speaks to, you know, being very knowledgeable about the systems that you're using. Maybe that's one of the things, if you're going to tackle a large site, make sure you know what the hell you're doing with the system in the first place.
That's a brilliant piece of advice. So true. Same goes for fireworks, yes.
So with that in mind, do you follow any particular development approaches that you think are particularly good for building a large site, like how you build your templates or how you set up channels? You know, how much you use in add-ons or not?
Nothing that boils down to like a quick list of two or three things. All of it has been learned and earned by painful experience, you know? I do have to say, I actually really like taking over sites from other EE developers. And I don't mean that from a like, hey, I got your site. I mean, whether it's a good site that I learn a bunch from and go, oh, wow, no, that's great. Or it's a bad site where I go, oh, wow, you know, like, I learned something by digging into it and trying to fix it. For me, it's always more interesting to pick up a site that someone else has worked on than it is to build from new, which isn't, it's interesting. That's, you know, other people in my office here, like, they like to build from scratch so they can just have this beautiful white canvas and create the exact structure that they want. But I kind of like to go in and go, you know, and learn and change what we're doing and so forth.
I think that is one of the things that we've noticed recently, because we've inherited sites, is that we're learning a whole lot more about something I think we both felt very expert in.
Yeah.
Right.
Trying to figure out why someone chose to do what they did and kind of reverse engineering kind of thing.
Maybe we should set up like some sort of Expression Engine potluck exchange or something where everybody takes a client and swaps with another client for, you know, like trading cards. It'd be fun.
Since you inherit a lot of sites, this leads me to the next question we had in our original episode with you. You mentioned how small things add up over time as sites get larger and larger. And then, you know, that's definitely true when you inherit a site. You're like, okay, what happened here, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a super large site and say you are starting with a blank canvas, are there ways to mitigate these issues as a client site scales from small to large? Or is this just what happens? Like, the larger a site gets, you just try to manage it.
It almost always just kind of happens, but you can certainly build in ways that take that sort of thing into account and try to avoid it. One example is when you are building a channel and you want to be able to pull things out of that channel based on what kind of thing they are. In this case, like articles, and the articles belong to certain sections. If you want to be able to put articles in a bunch of different sections and have that section list change all the time and so forth, then categories are kind of the way to go. But if you want like the fastest way to be able to pull articles that belong in a certain group, then for that, I would use statuses, because statuses are in the table called EXP Channel Titles, which is like the main channel table. And it's the one that you always have to query. But if you don't have to query any other table, and that's the case if you're using statuses to determine where your articles go, then it's really, really, really fast, and it scales really well. Even if you get up to like, you know, a million articles, if you're using statuses to control where your articles go, then you can look those up really, really fast. Now, unfortunately, articles tend to want to be in several different categories, and it's not often that you can set up a site with statuses. But that's the kind of thing that you kind of find that, like, over time, as you add more categories and more articles, you end up with this like very heavy database query that grows over time to be slower and slower. And then all of a sudden your server is like backing up and queuing requests and stuff. But if you can stick to statuses, you're going to avoid that. So, you know, is there like one tip I can give you? well, like, I just did give you one tip, but that's not going to solve every, like, that's not useful for everybody, right? But it's, that's what you discover with New Relic or with these tools to dig in and go, oh, where's the bottlenecks? How can I avoid that?
Oh, I've never in my life heard of this tip, so thank you.
Sure, sure.
And I mean, this just goes to show, like, no matter how long or how much you work with a system, because Emily and I have been working with Eve for so many years, it's like, we can do it in our sleep, that there's still stuff that we can learn from others. And, you know, this is why we have episodes like this, because there's always something new. There's always going to be a nugget here or there that will help improve your workflow or give you that aha moment.
Yeah. I will tell you one other thing, which is that I'm hosting a couple more clients now on Amazon's AWS platform. That thing is fast. I mean, if you're worried about handling a lot of traffic, that's definitely the way to go at this point. If, especially if you need scalability and you're not sure when you're going to need to scale it, but you know you are, and you know, like you have high hopes for a project, but you don't know for sure that you're going to need to be on, you know, a bunch of servers at once or how big you need to be. Amazon's services are incredibly fast, so I've been enjoying that.
So when you are using that service and you need to scale, is that something that, like, it notifies you, or you have to be at the ready to make changes, or is there some sort of some rules you set up in place that, you know, when X happens, then Amazon needs to do this to serve more resources? Or
there's two steps to the scaling. One is that you put yourself on an imaginary machine of a certain size that can scale to a certain other maximum size. So, you know, you can put yourself on the tiniest machine and that one will scale to like a large machine sort of automatically. Just if it needs a bunch of traffic, it will. Or you can put yourself on a fairly large default instance that'll scale to quite a large instance, sort of just elastically. So that's, you know, that'll handle a spike of 10 or 20 times the traffic pretty easily. But you can also set it up to automatically scale those instances themselves. So you can have a version of EE that is on the system, and then if it needs another machine, that machine will just blip into existence, you know, like 2 or 5 minutes later, and then it'll pick up half the traffic and you just kind of can grow from there, which is pretty amazing. The one difficulty of that, you know, extra machines blipping into existence is that the benefit of Expression Engine in a lot of cases is that you're collecting data as well, right? And if you're collecting it into Expression Engine, then you have to have it all come into one instance of Expression Engine. Like if someone's filling out a form,
right,
or they're registering as a member with EE or whatever, you know, it has to all go into one EE database. You can't just blip a bunch of them into existence. But if you have a site that's going to deal with that level of traffic, then what you just do is you make any collection, don't use EE for that, like collect data into Salesforce or collect data some other way, you know, like don't use EE commenting, use discuss, or just, you know, make anything that gathers information, put it in another system. And then the expression, if the expression engine is just the output, then you can easily just blip a bunch of those into existence. And, you know, I mean, that makes it sound super easy to set up. It's not super easy, but you can set it up to just blip 10 machines into existence if you need them, and all of them have the latest version of whatever your content is. And if you update the content, you just push that to all 10 machines quite easily. So
we haven't had a chance to work with anything like that. I kind of hope we do. I mean, it doesn't exactly sound fun if it happens when your client is getting hit with traffic and the site crashes. That is not fun. But then having an opportunity to give them a solution that's going to, you know, mitigate that to a degree. We haven't yet done that. We've just moved our clients to a bigger server.
Yeah, better infrastructure, essentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We still do most of our hosting with Nexus, who is a preferred or professional or something partner of Ellis Lab. I love their hosting. You know, I'm really happy with their service. And they can handle really big traffic, but for a few clients, AWS is really the only way to go. And I will say, you're totally right. Like, sometimes it's very frustrating because by the time your client gets big enough that they need to move or change their hosting, it's very difficult to do because they keep crashing, you know, like everything's slow because you're already sort of maxed out on the hardware and then you're trying to do extra development on it. It's very frustrating.
We were there.
Yeah.
But now, now they had a different launch this year and everything's good because we put them in the good infrastructure now. Mm-hmm. But since we were talking about, you know, greater challenges, we already spoke a little bit about security. What about, you know, backing all this up and caching a large site? Like, how do you back up such a massive site?
I mean, it is difficult, but it's also like just complex. There's so many different possible ways you might cache things. You know, there's several types of caching, even within out-of-the-box EE. And then I use an add-on called static page caching from Soulspace fairly often. But it is not without its headaches. And I don't know, you know, Stash has its own level of caching as well, if you happen to be using that. Like, there's a lot of ways that you can cache things to make it more efficient. But then you also don't want to lose what makes EE pretty handy, which is like the dynamic nature of it and being able to like edit something and have it be reflected all over the site. Like, change your navigation and boom, it's updated all over the site. When clients who are used to that get confused when everything's cached, and you're like, then you have to hit these three buttons and go here and do that. And
Yeah, I feel like there isn't quite a magic bullet for caching. I mean, even we've got some just some stash variables set up, rather stash caches set up, and just some brute force cache clearing. It's not nuanced per the area that's cached. And our client constantly forgets about it.
Yes,
she just forgets. She's got to clear her cache. So she's like, I'm having these problems. And as that's what it turns out to be, you know, they have to clear the cache. And then, you know, there are situations, whether this is a bad development on my part or just the nature of having different stash caches is, you know, the timing of them. Some are set to renew at this time and some are set to renew at another. And if it happens to have like a second conflict, something doesn't clear on its own kind of thing. And I think caching's a pain whether your site's large or small.
I ended up having to put on a cron job for the caching clearing, the brute force cache clearing, so that it mitigates any issues of that her forgetting that, okay, if something goes wrong, you have to do this. But since she's the only person who has the button to clear anything, you know, she gets panicked phone calls from administration because something was down for only 30 minutes. It's only been 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But the links aren't showing.
You know, I had a large client, samharris.org. He's an author. And he was on a piece of hardware that we were trying to make last. And at the level that it was at, and we had like many different levels of caching. And he was often frustrated because he would clear this level, but not that level, or, you know, something would go wrong because stuff goes wrong, and the more complex it is, the more it would happen. And what we ended up doing is we ended up putting him on AWS, and then we got rid of all the caching, like all of it. So now his site is, well, I should say it's not cached at all. There's one thing that does caching, and that's it. But the site can handle the load, and he is left with much less of a headache because he's never wondering, like, why is it not working, or, you know, how do I clear this? And so that was a great improvement. You know, sometimes caching is the answer, but sometimes not caching and just putting a bigger machine under it is the answer.
Yeah. So before we finish up, let's just talk a little bit about like upgrading and maintenance when we're dealing with like a large EE site. Is it possible to upgrade EE quickly when you're dealing with a large site? How do you approach it?
Yeah, absolutely. We do a lot of upgrades around here, as you might guess. In fact, that's a significant part of what we do. People often contact us. Even a month or two ago, we had someone who asked us to upgrade from 1 to 2, believe it or not. I guess that's a testament to things are running well, but also I was kind of like, really? You know, so we have a system in place for doing upgrades, and, you know, we'll basically, we'll take a snapshot of the site and we'll clone it, and then we'll run through the upgrade all the way to the end and make sure everything's working right and document all the steps that we needed to do, whether it's like weird little database commands or modifications to templates or, you know, anything like that, all the add-ons, and, you know, fully test it. Then what we usually do is we'll do the same thing again. We'll take all our steps, and then we'll do it again, and we'll take the database, put it in a staging area, run the update, and then copy it back over to the live site. So the database and the files get pushed back out to live. And depending on the type of update, sometimes that means you've only got a downtime of like 2 or 3 minutes, just, you know, from like basically copying the database over and copying or changing the file name or the, you know, the folder name, and then you're good to go. On a really large site, if you're dealing with like a million entries or so forth, then you might be looking at a 15-minute or an hour downtime or something like that. And if you want to do, if you have a very robust testing list, you know, then that can add some more time onto it there. But, you know, for small updates, you know, 2.8 to 2.10 or something, even for a large site, I think it's pretty reasonable to have a downtime of like 15 minutes, maybe less, you know.
Right.
If something goes wrong, then you roll, you put the old database back, and then you do the another 15-minute outage the next day sort of thing. But yeah, that's kind of how I see updates going with a large site.
And with a large site, particularly if we're using traffic as the barometer for that, I mean, do you have to coordinate all that with the client? Do you make recommendations on when that should happen? Like when the traffic's the lowest to have that downtime?
Absolutely. You know, it's best to do it when traffic's lowest. But I also would consider a factor of when are you going to have resources available to help you if something does go wrong. For a big enough site, you can get everybody on board and get them all to work Friday at 10 p.m. because that's a nice, you know, quiet time. But sometimes with the client, I'm like, you know, we can work Friday at 10 p.m., but are your editors going to be up for testing at that time? You know, mm-hmm. like we can be sure that, as sure as we can be, that the upgrade went well. But I would rather do it at like 9 in the morning, you know, right when you come into work, before your busiest time of day, but still like everybody's there, everybody's going to be answering their phones. Yeah. So mm-hmm. It's a trade-off.
So what, any final advice for anyone planning a large site or a large site on EE?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Plan ahead. You really can test your site for traffic. You can build it and you can run a program that just like pretends to hit it, you know, 100,000 times in an hour and see like what breaks, what's slow, what pages don't respond. If you really think you're going to get big traffic, then, you know, test it beforehand. Don't just hope. Even if you have a really skilled developer, they aren't going to know where the boat leaks until it's in the sea.
I think one of the things that some of what you've shared today just reminds me of, and I feel like I always need reminders that, you know, when you're planning a site, a large site in particular, it's really important to make sure you're asking what may even be what you think are the simplest questions, but, you know, asking the prospect or your client, like, what are they anticipating traffic will be, especially if it's like a new site that doesn't already have some sort of analytics, or even, you know, like you were describing using statuses and an option for managing categories, like thinking about how you might develop something if performance is hugely important and they're expecting a whole lot of
exactly.
traffic,
yeah.
then pushing back when they say we want to do X, Y, and Z becomes important because, you know, then they have to choose what's more important to you. You know, you having an article in 20 different categories, you know, 20 different sections, you know, to have that sort of flexibility, or is it to have it be, you know, really speedy? And that's a super simplified example. That's not the only thing that would make something speedy. But I think, you know, the planning, the preparation, asking what may even be simple questions is really, really important. And I think it's easy to forget that. Because you get caught up and you're like, oh, I'm going to make this site. It's going to be great. We're going to use EE. I'm going to do it this way. And you've already started planning and thinking how you're going to do it, but you haven't asked the initial questions that kind of can guide that process of how you're going to do it.
Totally true.
Awesome. Well, Travis, we've reached the end of our show. But before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
Okay.
Are you ready, Travis?
Sure.
First question, morning person or night owl?
Total night owl.
What's one of your guilty pleasures?
Nachos.
What software could you not live without?
Is it weird that I'm embarrassed to say BB Edit? Like, I shouldn't be embarrassed
awesome.
About that. Okay, yes, BB Edit.
What profession other than your own would you like to try?
Professional ultimate player.
Like ultimate frisbee?
Like ultimate frisbee, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I haven't played that since college.
No way.
What profession would you not like to try?
Oh, doctor.
If you could take us to one restaurant in your town, where would we go?
Oh, Vancouver has so many good restaurants. It's kind of crazy. My old favorite was Hapa Izakaya, which is a Japanese small place.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's so good. It's so good. But now everybody else is caught up. Like, they're not bad. I'm just saying, like, it's tough. That's a tough one.
If you could meet someone famous, living or dead, who would it be?
Leonardo da Vinci.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Stopping time.
What is your favorite band or musician?
Again, my taste is kind of eclectic, so I feel bad for leaving out every other musician on the planet. I'm listening to a lot of Iron and Wine lately.
All right, last question. Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles, because they hold the syrup better. They've got the little cups.
I love the justifications.
People will tell you, and actually, it's funny that you notice that. I've always got a reason for things. There's always some reason. in the back
of my
head.
You're a thoughtful person.
Crazy.
All right. Yeah. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us again, Travis.
You're welcome. It's been really fun. And thanks for having me.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
You can email me at nep@hopstudios.com, or I'm on Twitter at nep.
Thanks, Travis. It was so fun to revisit this topic with you.
Thanks a bunch. Oh, one more thing. If anyone has any information about a large EE site that's not on the list, please let me know. I really would love to make sure that this list is accurate and up to date.
Awesome.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Visual Chefs.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and DevOT.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast, or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in the show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we're going to talk about color with Jerry Cody. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Click Cast. See you next time.
Cheers.